Makes sense. The meeting will come to order. The committee meets today to consider two nominations to the intelligence community in positions that require Senate confirmation. They are Ambassador Philip Goldberg, nominated to be the Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of Intelligence and Research, which we fondly know as INR, and Ms. Karen Wagner, nominated to be Undersecretary of Homeland Security for Intelligence and Analysis, or INA. I'd like to welcome both of you and say congratulations. Both individuals were nominated by President Obama on October 26. They have since met with me and other members of the committee and have responded to numerous pre-hearing questions. Their responses are now posted on the Intelligence Committee's website for public view. Interestingly enough, both nominees come from different backgrounds and are nominated to lead two very different intelligence organizations. Ambassador Goldberg is nominated to lead an organization with a very distinguished and respected history. The State Department Bureau of Intelligence and Research conducts all source intelligence analysis to advise the Secretary of State and other senior department officials, and serves as an active participant in intelligence community-wide analytic products. Its analysts, while far fewer in number than the all-source analysis organizations at the CIA and DIA, are highly expert in their fields and have no qualms about vocally dissenting from judgments they believe to be incorrect or unsubstantiated, and that's very much appreciated. One example of importance to me was INR's view in the 2002 NIE on Iraq that Iraq was not reconstituting nuclear weapons, especially due to INR's different view on the use of aluminum tubes in centrifuges. That obviously proved to be correct. Ambassador Goldberg himself has been long involved in national security issues and has received intelligence throughout his career, but has no past experience inside the intelligence community. We will be very interested in hearing Ambassador Goldberg's views on his preparations to assume the responsibility. Ambassador Goldberg is a career Foreign Service officer. He has distinguished himself over a 20-year period, including Charge d'Affaires and Deputy Chief of Mission in Santiago, Chile, Chief of Mission in Pristina, Kosovo, and United States Ambassador to Bolivia. Since June, he has served as the coordinator for the implementation of United Nations resolutions on North Korea. Earlier in his career, he served in Bogota, Colombia, and Pretoria, South Africa. A particular note is his being declared persona non grata by Bolivian President Evo Morales in September of 2008. The committee has looked at this incident, and members may have a few questions, but it's pretty clear to me that Ambassador Goldberg had no blame in this matter. Ms. Wagner, by contrast, is a career intelligence professional, beginning as an Army SIGINT officer and rising to the level of captain. After 3 years on the House Intelligence Committee, Ms. Wagner joined the senior ranks of the DIA before becoming Director of Intelligence Community Management Staff and subsequently the Assistant Deputy DNI and Chief Financial Officer. She returned to the House Intelligence Committee as Budget Director and is now a faculty member of the Intelligence and Security Academy, LLC. She is being nominated to head the Office of Intelligence and Analysis at the Department of Homeland Security, which, unlike INR, is a young intelligence organization and one that has struggled to identify a clear mission and bring together an appropriate workforce. We have discussed that earlier. The committee's report accompanying the FY 2010 Intelligence Authorization Bill noted some of these concerns. They include that as of this summer, contract personnel make up a staggering 63% of the workforce of the Office of Intelligence and Analysis, including a large percentage of its intelligence analysts. In my view, this is an inherently governmental function and should be done by the government, not by contractors. The office has written analysis that inappropriately analyzed legitimate activities of U.S. persons based in part on highly questionable and non-credible open source information. In addition, the office has numerous and unclear missions, some of which overlap with work being done by other departments. According to the Homeland Security Institute, the office is unstable and lacks structures for budget and management accountability. I've discussed that this morning with Mrs. Wagner, and I actually believe she's up to it, so we'll see what comes. I'm told that the Office of Intelligence and Analysis has been drafting a plan to restructure and refine its mission, but the plan won't be finalized until a new undersecretary is confirmed, so that will be clearly, Ms. Wagner, your first big job. And I think this committee will be very interested in your views as a professional on what the office should be doing and how it should be structured or restructured. Again, I welcome both witnesses, and I will turn to the vice chairman for any opening comments he might have.
Did you welcome the family members?
No, I did not, so you might want to do that.
Go ahead and do that. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. You've laid down a tough gauntlet. We welcome both of the nominees and ask, do you have family members here or close friends who are supporting you today? Ms. Wagner?
Yes, thank you, Senator Bond. My husband, Chad Lash, is here with me, and I have numerous friends, which I won't name because I will no doubt forget one.
Okay, we will recognize husband. Welcome, sir. Ambassador?
I have my colleagues from the State Department with me.
Well, thank you very much. While the public often hears about other elements of the Intelligence Community, the office each of you is nominated to head, INR at State and Intelligence and Analysis Department of Homeland Security, can and should be making valuable contributions to the community and to our national security. As the chairman said, the chair said, I also have had conversations with you and pointed out some things where we think you can enhance and improve the operations of intelligence. Now, Ambassador Goldberg, the chair stole one of my best lines, but I wanted to say that few people in history can claim the honor of being expelled by the likes of Evo Morales, so it's clear that you've already chalked up a major accomplishment, at least in my book, and I congratulate you on that. I'm interested to hear how you expect your experiences in Bolivia and other diplomatic posts will help you head an analytic shop. Ms. Wagner, a few months ago at a reception, I had the pleasure of sitting next to a former MI5 official who shared some insights on the importance in this war on terror of forging solid and productive relationships among federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. His point to me was that what the Brits do and we do not do is use the contacts we have, the continuing contacts we have with state and local officials, to task them to bring information up the chain of command. We send information down, but the local police department or a local sheriff's office is far more likely to know when or hear when something amiss is going on in their community and report that back up the chain. So we've talked about that, and I think that while it's very important, and I hear complaints that not enough intelligence is being pushed downstream, there may not be enough intelligence coming upstream from thousands of communities, and we hope that you will pursue that. We can make fusion centers work, but there's a lot of intelligence, I believe, can be best gathered at the local level. On the federal level, we need to make a firmer commitment to training these local authorities to identify and collect the intelligence. Now, Ms. Wagner, if you're confirmed, I expect you will work closely with Director Mueller and the Attorney General in the coming months to make better training programs a reality. They can be done without a lot of additional cost, but the benefits will more than compensate for any price they cost. Madam Chair, I'm sure that both of these nominees are anxiously awaiting our questions, and even more importantly, their exit strategy from HART 216. So with that, I congratulate them on their nominations and look forward to hearing from them today.
Thank you very much, Senator. Ms. Wagner, why don't we begin with you, if that's all right?
Thank you very much, Senator Feinstein, Senator Bond. I'm honored to appear before you today as the nominee for Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysis at the Department of Homeland Security. I believe this position occupies a unique mission space between the national intelligence and law enforcement communities and the state, local, tribal, and private sector entities that are the front lines of Homeland Security. There's nothing more important than forging and fostering those connections. If confirmed, I believe I have the right skills to continue building on the foundation laid by Pat Hughes, Charlie Allen, and the current acting Undersecretary Bart Johnson. I began my intelligence career as a signals intelligence officer in the United States Army, serving 8 years on active duty. In the years since, I have spent 7.5 years at DIA, 5 years on the staff of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, 3 years in the private sector, and 3 years with the ODNI. I've had a mixture of staff and line management jobs, including leading a 2,000-person analytic organization within the Defense Intelligence Agency. I've also had a great deal of experience in an interagency environment, and I'm familiar with all facets of the intelligence community. While my experience with law enforcement has been more limited, I have had significant exposure while working at the DNI and in Congress to the capabilities and contributions of national law enforcement and Homeland Security agencies. I know I have much to learn about state, local, and tribal law enforcement, which is why, if confirmed, I'm eager to get started with the help of Principal Deputy Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysis, Bart Johnson, who's a highly respected and decorated veteran of the New York State Police Force and who's done an outstanding job as acting Undersecretary for the past 6 months. I've had the opportunity to observe the Office of Intelligence and Analysis from the outside while I served in the Office of the DNI and on the HPSI staff, and I am aware of the many challenges that the organization faces. Since my nomination, I've learned more about INA's statutory mission, its ongoing activities, and the Secretary's vision about where she would like to take the department. I formed some preliminary views on what needs to be done to enhance INA's support to its customers and to the department, and to improve its standing within the intelligence community and with its congressional overseers. If confirmed, I plan to focus my initial efforts in three main areas. First, creating a true Homeland Security information sharing enterprise through greater focus on the state and local fusion centers. Second, creating a DHS intelligence enterprise as the chief intelligence officer for the department. And third, putting in place the management processes necessary to improve the morale, efficiency, and professionalism of INA as an organization. The unique niche that DHS INA occupies is best defined by its responsibility to share information with state, local, and tribal authorities and the private sector on the full range of threats to the homeland, often referred to as all threats, all hazards. First responders at the state and local levels are the nation's first line of defense. They are uniquely able to identify anomalous or criminal behavior that could have a terrorist nexus. It's critical to educate them on terrorist indicators as they're identified, to capture information that is lawfully obtained while strictly adhering to privacy, civil rights, and civil liberties regulations, and share it with the wider enterprise. This is a multifaceted challenge that requires adapting analytic methodologies and product lines, a great deal of training at all levels of the enterprise, and IT and information sharing solutions to enable two-way information flow. It also requires an approach that is tailored to the different threat and operational realities of the individual fusion centers. If confirmed, I intend to develop a comprehensive multi-year strategic plan for supporting the state and local fusion centers that can be used to guide resource and analytic planning. The role of the Chief Intelligence Officer for the Department was created by Secretary Chertoff to empower the Undersecretary to create a DHS intelligence enterprise that was more than the sum of its parts. DHS's operational components have intelligence elements that support their individual missions, and they also have data and expertise that can be leveraged by INA in support of departmental priorities or national, state, local, and tribal clients, while strictly adhering to privacy, civil rights, and civil liberties regulations. In addition, the components may have intelligence or information requirements that are not adequately being met. INA can help to meet these requirements by leveraging the rest of the intelligence community on their behalf, producing tailored products for or with them, providing analytic training and mentoring, and serving as an advocate for increasing their capabilities. By leveraging both the components and INA capabilities, we can build on recent progress to create a true intelligence enterprise that enables INA and the department to achieve their full potential and best serve their customers. If confirmed, I will view the role of Chief Intelligence Officer for the department as one of the most important of my missions and put in place a staff structure to manage it. Finally, in the management arena, INA is still a young organization, and several recent studies have suggested that it suffers from a lack of institutionalized processes and from poor morale. If confirmed, one of my biggest priorities will be developing and formalizing internal processes for planning, programming, and budgeting, for performance measurement, and human capital measurement, and most certainly, I will be taking a hard look at contractors. I believe that communicating clear mission guidance, implementing fair and transparent processes for hiring, promoting, and rewarding people, and developing a structured and inclusive process for building the budget will go a long way towards improving morale. If confirmed, I also plan to make training a centerpiece of my agenda. I've already mentioned the importance of training to building information sharing and intelligence enterprises, but it is equally important for professional development and morale within INA. If confirmed, I will focus on ensuring that INA analysts receive the tradecraft training that they need. Finally, if confirmed, I will work hard to establish and maintain constructive partnerships, particularly with the Office of the DNI, the National Counterterrorism Center, the FBI, and the Congress. If confirmed, I pledge to keep you fully informed of INA's progress and activities. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Goldberg, Ambassador, I should say.
Madam Chairman and Mr. Vice Chairman, it is a great honor to appear before you today as President Obama's nominee to be Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of Intelligence and Research. I am grateful to the President and Secretary of State Clinton for their confidence in nominating me for this position, as well as to the Director of National Intelligence, Dennis Blair, for his support in my nomination. If confirmed by the Senate, I pledge to work closely with this committee as it plays a vital role in the oversight of the intelligence community. Madam Chairman, INR has been a treasured source of information and analysis for policymakers for more than 60 years. INR is also a deeply respected voice within the intelligence community. INR's success has not been based on its size or budget. Rather, it has been based on the extraordinary experience, judgment, and analytical skill of its personnel. INR's well-earned reputation for insight and professionalism is based on a mix of civil and foreign service personnel, a combination of those who spend years and often decades on an issue, buttressed by those with recent experience in our embassies overseas. If confirmed, I will work to enhance the ability of these fine professionals to do their jobs through training, academic opportunities, and service overseas, and I will work to recruit the finest people available. I will also defend the process of independent and unbiased analysis, as well as the people who produce it. As you point out, Madam Chairman, the people of INR have in recent times won praise for the quality of their work, as well as sticking to their analytic conclusions when necessary. INR has another essential role, assuring that intelligence activities are consistent with and supportive of our foreign policy and national security objectives. In this area, too, INR is fortunate to have a staff of professionals who have special expertise and years of experience in often very technical areas. If confirmed, I look forward to working with these professionals to support the Secretary and Department in assuring that foreign policy concerns are a central consideration in intelligence community decisions and activities. I will also work with the relevant committees of Congress as they carry out their essential oversight roles. Madam Chairman, I believe that if confirmed, I would bring a set of skills and experience to the job of Assistant Secretary for Intelligence and Research that will add to the value of the Bureau. While I have not previously served in a position in the intelligence community, I have had extensive and relevant experience in almost all aspects of INR's core functions. I've worked closely with analysts in the intelligence community as a political, economic, and biographic officer at embassies overseas in helping to produce analytical products. In addition, I have myself produced analytic products for policymakers from assignments in embassies as well as in Washington. This experience has given me a strong appreciation for the independence, intellectual rigor, experience, and personal integrity that contribute to good analytical products. Having worked on policy matters in four geographic bureaus and on the seventh floor of the department, I have a strong appreciation for how intelligence can best support diplomacy and its practitioners. This is INR's primary mission. As a chargé d'affaires and two-time chief of mission, I have ensured that intelligence and law enforcement activities were carried out in support of foreign policy and national security objectives. Most recently, I have served as coordinator for implementation of UN Security Council resolutions on North Korea, a job that requires analysis of intelligence information and close coordination with other intelligence community members. My experience leading large and complex missions overseas, as well as managerial assignments at the State Department, have prepared me to lead this large bureau. Madam Chairman, we live in a time of enormous foreign policy and national security challenges. On issues of war and peace, nonproliferation, climate change, and the economic and financial situation around the globe, our leaders need and deserve the very best information and analysis before making difficult decisions. If confirmed by the Senate, I look forward to working with you and your colleagues to make sure that happens. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both very, very much. I have a list of four questions that we ask all nominees. If you would just respond yes or no to each of them. The first is, do you agree to appear before the committee here or in other venues when invited?
Yes.
I often wondered what we would do if someone said no. Okay.
You can confirm it.
Yeah.
I get it. Ms. Wagner nodded yes. Did you?
She said yes.
I heard her.
Do you agree to send officials from your respective organizations to appear before the committee and designated staff when requested?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you agree to provide documents and any other material requested by the committee in order for it to carry out its oversight and legislative responsibilities?
To the best of my ability, yes.
The same, to the best of my ability, yes.
What does that mean?
If it ever became, as far as the INR Bureau goes and as far as I'm concerned, I will share whatever we can. There are some issues that from time to time might come up about documents, executive privilege, and the rest that might be beyond my control.
Well, let me just say, this is the first time anybody has qualified their answer, and that's going to have to be looked into more deeply, because this committee expects to get documents it requests. We are the oversight committee, and to have intelligence agencies without the ability to conduct oversight is not acceptable to us.
No, Chair, I might add that the President has the right to declare things of higher security level, and we would, before we would accept that, we would need to know from the White House that this was something over which they're exercising their national security authorities.
Well, that's right, Mr. Vice Chairman.
We would carry our argument to 1600.
That's right. And executive privilege can't be a drift net to pick up everything that people don't want to have oversight about. And that's where we become the guardian angels, so to speak.
Absolutely.
But just so you understand
Madam Chairman, I didn't at all mean to say that we, from our point of view and from my point of view, would share all information requested by the committee. That was the qualification, and it really isn't a qualification. It's something that would be up beyond my control.
Well, I just want everybody to know if the committee asks for it, we expect to get it, unless there's not a good reason, or you're going to have to tangle with us, and you don't want to do that.
No.
Okay. Last question. Will you ensure that your respective offices provide such material to the committee when requested?
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask each one of you one question, and then I'll move on. Ms. Wagner, in testimony before the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee on September 30th of this year, DHS Secretary Napolitano noted that I&A is, quote, currently undergoing an important realignment to strengthen the delivery of useful, actionable intelligence to state and local law enforcement based on their particular needs. Here's the question. Have you been briefed on this realignment, and do you support it?
Yes, Madam Chairman, I have been briefed, and the realignment is still ongoing. It has not been finalized, but Bart Johnson did brief me on what he is proposing to do at the top level. I think it makes sense, but I would like to reserve the right, if confirmed, to be able to make adjustments to that, and so I would prefer to come up and brief you after I'm confirmed, if I'm confirmed, on where that is.
Well, if I understand you correctly, you're saying that you will have some input into the realignment.
Yes, Madam.
And therefore, it is not finalized.
It is not finalized.
Well, we will take you at your word, because I think it's fair to say that there are some weaknesses in your area, and we'd like to see them corrected, so the correction that you can bring about could be very important, and we'd like to have you discuss that with us, if that's agreeable with you.
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much. Let me move to Mr. Goldberg. We talked this morning about the fact that you have not previously worked in an intelligence agency or produced intelligence analysis. Now, you do have significant experience in a lot of different areas, in receiving it in particular. And so, in my view at least, you're clearly qualified for this work. But can you give the committee some specific examples from your background of when you have provided judgments that run counter to policy preferences?
I think the kinds of policy analysis and just plain analytical work that I've done, particularly in the Balkans in the 1990s, oftentimes was in a difficult atmosphere when we were debating within the United States government about whether to intervene first in Bosnia, later in Kosovo, and those kinds of issues were ones that I was fortunate enough to be able to weigh in on and give my unvarnished view on, I think in part because of the people I worked for, but also because I felt that it was important to do so.
Thank you. I'm not going to ask you what your views were, but I think it's very important. One of the things that we want to see are really independent intelligence agencies. Give policymakers the unvarnished truth as they see it, and they're not swayed by what they perceive an administration or anybody else, for that matter, might want.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I agree.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following up, Ms. Wagner, on the questions from the Chair, what do you think should be the primary focus of INA? Operational support of its components and fusion centers, disseminating finished intelligence products and unclassified information, or some other thing? And what would be your priorities?
Senator Bond, I think that the primary mission of INA is spelled out in the legislation. What Congress expects of it is to share information with the state, local, tribal, and private sector entities. And INA, as far as I can tell, is the only element of the intelligence community that views those people as its primary customer set. But it also, as a departmental intelligence element, has the responsibility to support the other elements of the department and to sort of orchestrate the intelligence symphony, if you will, of the intelligence elements within the various components. So I think those two things are key, but it also goes back to what you'd said in your opening comments, is that the information needs to, sharing flows both ways. We need to make sure that they're the clients, but we also need to be aware that they have a wealth of information that needs to be synthesized and analyzed and shared with the larger intelligence community to support national intelligence as well.
Do you think you'd be able to provide training for representatives of the local law enforcement agencies, so they will be able to carry back to their forces, to their teams, what information, what activities may be useful
Do you see that being...
I do. I think that the department and INA can do a lot by providing training. I know the secretary wants to support analytic excellence at the fusion centers. That's certainly an area where INA can help with training. And the department is already helping with developing training on ensuring that privacy, civil rights, and civil liberties are protected at the fusion centers. There's a great deal that can be done, and I think training is a key element.
Thank you, Ms. Wagner. Ambassador, you said on issues of war and peace, nonproliferation, climate change, and the economic and financial situation around the globe, our leaders need and deserve the very best information and analysis before making difficult decisions, close quotes. Do you really believe that studying climate change is really the best use of our limited intelligence analysis resources?
I believe that it is one area. It is largely a scientific issue and probably not of the of INR's necessarily its competence to judge. But we are involved in negotiations the climate change area, and policymakers would need information analysis on the positions of others and how they would approach these issues, and so it would be more in line with our more traditional diplomatic role.
All right, well, I assume, given recent revelations, you might be looking into the process of some of the analysis that came out of certain so-called scientific institutions, but that may be beyond beyond your scope. I mentioned to you that INR has developed a reputation for being a dissenting voice in intelligence community products, and I think some INR analysts believe this is a positive, but I've heard from others that it may be a negative because continuing dissent may make those views ignored. What's your view about this type of reputation? Is it a problem? And what could you do to change perception without impacting INR's independence?
I think, Mr. Vice Chairman, that the reputation of INR is also for a feistiness and an independence, which is something to be encouraged in the production of intelligence analysis. I took your statement very much to heart when we had a chance to meet, and I went back to look at estimates this year, and without going into the details of the estimates, there was less than, I think it was 3 out of 13 that there were either, two of them were dissents in part, and one was more or less a more general dissent. So I don't know that it's a huge issue, but certainly I want to encourage our analysts to use their best judgment and to put their best thoughts forward. That's, I think, my responsibility.
Finally, one of the responses you made to the committee's questions, you said the roles of the assistant secretary is to play a key role in assuring that diplomatic and foreign policy positions are represented in the formulation of intelligence policy and activities. Can you explain what that means?
It means that, Mr. Vice Chairman, I think that we have a responsibility to assure that that at least is one consideration, and that the regional assistant secretaries, but the secretary has a voice in that process. I would view INR's role as very much that of an honest broker, because we have a responsibility certainly to the intelligence community, and we want to make sure that the intelligence flow continues, but that is one consideration, and that is a role that is designated to INR and to the State Department, so it's one that within the councils of the IC is one of many factors that would be taken into account.
So policy positions would affect the intelligence operations?
No, sir. Maybe I didn't express it well. It's more of a risk-reward kind of issue. If the to point out the possible downsides, the possible damage, the possible consequences of something happens, so that that's known up front before something would occur, so that it can be taken into account at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chairman. Senator Whitehouse?
Thank you, Chairman Feinstein. Could I ask each of you, first of all, about cyber security issues? It does not appear in either of your statements as a matter of concern. And I'm interested in knowing, A, briefly, because my time is short, what type of priority you think it is, and B, whether additional efforts on the part of your agency should you think be required.
Thank you, Senator. I'll take that one. I think it is obviously a critical issue, and it is something that I've already looked into in the limited time I've had as a nominee. I know there are ongoing analytic efforts as part of the critical infrastructure protection analysis effort at the department. I don't know yet whether those are sufficient. I would expect, if I'm confirmed, one of the first things that I plan to do is to go talk to Phil Reitinger, who's the Deputy Undersecretary responsible for cyber, and talk to him about how INA can effectively team with him to make sure he gets the analytic support that he needs. And I know that as this issue continues to evolve, there's probably room to sort out exactly who's going to do what. But it's an area I expect to focus on. I was the cyber security coordinator for the HPSI before I retired, so I'm very familiar with some of those issues.
Good. Ambassador Goldberg.
Senator, I agree it is an absolutely critical issue. It's one that INR has taken the lead role in at the State Department in organizing us to deal with a critical issue. We are still in a bit of a state of flux on some of the cyber issues in terms of organization because INR, as the link with the intelligence community, has a very large role. But some of the issues that may be coming up in the years to come will be diplomatic missions as well, and that's not a traditional INR role. We are organized to deal with the internal issues for the State Department in terms of our cyber issues. I have already had a discussion, a brief one, with General Alexander about some of the larger issues involved. It's a very important, it's going to be a very important foreign policy issue as well. So we're on it, and we need to continue to follow it very closely, and we will.
On a second point, I think there is a strong bipartisan consensus on the part of this committee that we are sick to death of leaks out of the executive branch of government. And not only is it a bipartisan concern of this committee, but it's a bipartisan issue. There was leaking like a sieve in the Bush administration. It doesn't seem to have stopped with the change of administrations. And over again, we are subjected to the unhelpful spectacle of, you know, having our staffs cleared out of a room for some hyper-secure briefing that we then read about a day later in the New York Times. And I would like to hear what leaking is politics in Washington. It's the way people expand their turf and make their moves. And so a tolerance for it has developed that I think is, frankly, needs to be adjusted. And I would like to hear both of you put yourselves on record on the subject of leaks, how seriously you will take their investigations, whether you will engage in them yourselves, and how you consider that problem. Again, Ms. Wagner, if you could go first.
Well, Senator, I share your concern about leaks and also your perspective on why they happen. I do take them seriously. If I'm confirmed and I have reason to believe that anyone in my organization is leaking, I will deal with that as a matter of management accountability. If it rises to a level that requires a crimes report be submitted, I would certainly support doing that. So I share your concern, and I'll take every action that I can to ensure that the leaks do not come from INA if I'm confirmed.
Thank you. Ambassador?
I share Ms. Wagner's statement. I would add that the personnel at INR are not involved in politics, and they shouldn't be involved in politics. They have no business being involved in politics, and we would, if a leak were to be seen to be coming, even from our general direction, it's something I would take very serious.
And each of you may very well be called upon to be witnesses or to make your staff available as witnesses in investigations of leaks that may take place higher up, but the trail is back through information developed by your organization. I assume I can hear you say that you provide your full cooperation and unstintingly to such investigations?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before recognizing Senator Wyden, I'd like to point out that that I have appointed a task force on cyber, which is a very serious concern to this committee. Senator Whitehouse heads that task force. Senator Mikulski and Senator Snow are members, and they will be probably talking with you in a more serious nature at a later time. But it is of major importance to this committee, and I just want to have the opportunity to say that. Senator Wyden.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome to both nominees. Ms. Wagner, it seems to me there are some very serious problems that are now facing the Department of Homeland Security's intelligence unit, and I want to ask you specifically about your response to several of those. And let me start by reading you a brief excerpt from a report that the committee approved unanimously earlier this year. And I quote here, "The committee has raised a number of concerns with reports issued by the Department of Homeland Security Office of Intelligence and Analysis that inappropriately analyzed the legitimate activities of U.S. persons. These reports raised fundamental questions about the mission of the Office of Intelligence and Analysis and often used certain questionable open source information as a basis of their conclusions." Now, the committee is not talking here about one instance. They are talking about a pattern. And this report was approved unanimously by the entire committee. So my first question is, if you're approved, what specific steps would you take to make sure that the office stops this inappropriate analysis of the legitimate activities of law-abiding Americans?
Well, Senator Wyden, I am aware of some of the troubling products that have been released from INA in the past. And if I'm confirmed, I intend to attack that several different ways. There are a couple of issues that are reflected in those products. One is basically poor tradecraft, lack of analytic rigor. The other is the problem with the failure to take into proper account privacy, civil rights, civil liberties, and First Amendment protected speech. And the problem with the definitions in one particular product was it did not draw a sufficient distinction between beliefs and actions. So I would put in place a very strict tradecraft training program to include mentoring for the analysts. I would also ensure that there is training for everyone on the guidelines that we are to follow that flow from EO 12333 and have been coordinated with the Justice Department to make sure that all of those concerns vis-a-vis privacy, civil rights, and civil liberties are built into the products early on. And finally, as a sort of insurance measure, I will make sure that there is in place a very thorough vetting process for review before those products are actually released.
Do you believe that it is ever appropriate for your office to analyze the legitimate activities of law-abiding Americans?
No, Senator, I do not.
Okay. Now, the Homeland Security Institute, and they're federally funded as a research center, conducted an independent evaluation of the office. The evaluation gave the office an overall ranking of 1.5 out of 5 with regard, I gather it's called general functionality. In particular, it noted, and I quote here, back office processes are ill-defined, inconsistent, and ad hoc. And again, quoting, they stated planning, programming, and budget processes are ill-defined and lack division manager involvement. Now, you are a former chief financial officer for the agency, the budget director for the House Intelligence Committee. I assume you're up on these general issues. Do you agree with the independent evaluation?
Senator Wyden, I haven't had an opportunity to be briefed on all these processes in detail, but as far as I know, the evaluation is accurate, and I expect to make addressing those management issues and processes one of my top priorities if I'm confirmed.
Since I'm running out of time, based on what you know now, what specific steps would you take to address these concerns from the independent analysis?
It seems to me that what the primary problem is a lack of repeatable and transparent processes that give people trust in the organization and their leadership. And I think I would take steps to put those processes in place. I have done that before as the director for analysis and production at DIA, leading a large analytic organization, and I think that I have the ability to address some of these issues. It will take a little bit of time, but I'm going to make it a priority.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Feingold.
I thank the chair, and I want to thank the nominees for your willingness to serve in these positions. Last month, I had the pleasure of chairing a nomination hearing for Ambassador Goldberg at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. So I'm going to address my questions to Ms. Wagner today. As Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysis, you'll have responsibility for setting policies related to the collection, analysis, mining, dissemination, and retention of open source information, including on Americans. And as I know you're aware, this is an important homeland security responsibility, but it's also fraught with privacy and civil liberties implications. For example, DHS sent open source information to the Maryland State Police about the First Amendment protected protest activities of local anti-war groups, something that Senators Mikulski and Cardin and I expressed concerns about earlier this year. So, Wagner, what in your view constitutes open source information on Americans, and what is INA's role in setting policies for how that information can be used?
Senator Feingold, I believe there are well-established guidelines and processes already in place that just need to be followed, and the analysts need to be rigorously trained. The language in EO 12333 that protects U.S. persons' data hasn't changed since 1981. There are guidelines that INA is using, should be using, that flow from that, and that, again, have been coordinated with the Department of Justice. I believe that training, oversight, and review and release mechanisms are critical to ensure that we are only using data that it is appropriate and lawful for us to use in accordance with all applicable laws and regulations.
Well, Director Blair has said it is one thing for a private company to have detailed private information. It is another for the U.S. government, with all its power and authority, to have the same information. So when is it appropriate for the government to purchase from private companies data on Americans not suspected of any wrongdoing, and should that information be considered open source?
I don't believe so, Senator. I think that for us to have information, it needs to be tied to a legitimate intelligence requirement that we can defend. It needs to be consistent with our legal authorities, and it needs to be handled consistent with privacy guidelines that are laid out in the documents that I mentioned earlier.
Okay, then would it be fair to say, because a lot of Americans voluntarily put a lot of information on the Internet to be read by everyone, including government officials, would it be fair to say that there are limits to how much of that information can be retained and when it can be subjected to data mining?
Yes, I think there are limits. And, again, I think there are some very crucial legal tests that need to be met in dealing with that information.
The FBI's authority to collect, retain, and use information on Americans are subject to statute and the Attorney General's guidelines and oversight. This and other committees periodically debate whether those authorities are too broad or not broad enough and whether the checks and balances are adequate. But members of Congress generally know where to look to understand the legal framework for what the FBI does. INA, on the other hand, is a new institution. It has operated with little specific legal guidance governing intelligence activities that have a potential impact on Americans. Wagner, as INA policies continue to take shape, where should this guidance come from? Is there a role for the Department of Justice, and have you identified unresolved constitutional or statutory questions or other gaps in the legal guidance currently available to INA, and if you identified those gaps, how would you go about resolving them?
I have not yet identified any gaps, but if I'm confirmed, and I do, I think I intend to rely heavily on the Department's Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties and the Privacy Office. INA is in the process of hiring its own dedicated privacy officer. I would first look in-house for guidance on how to deal with appropriate information or programs, and then I would expect that we would deal with the Department of Justice if it required any changes to the guidelines that we currently operate under, which we did negotiate and consult with them on.
Okay. I've long been concerned about the lack of a meaningful standard governing the seizure of travelers' laptop and computers by the Department of Homeland Security. Can you tell me what INA's policy is for obtaining, retaining, analyzing, and disseminating the contents of seized laptops?
Senator, as you know, INA doesn't actually seize the laptops, but under certain circumstances, if data that was in the laptops was provided to INA, we would treat it in accordance with all of the applicable laws and regulations on analyzing and storing that data.
Would you commit to considering a policy whereby DHS must seek to obtain a warrant before it can hold the contents of a seized laptop for more than 24 hours?
Senator Feingold, I really don't feel I'm in a position to answer that question right now. I just don't know enough to answer it, but I'd be happy to come back and discuss that with you further after.
Could you get back to me as soon as you can with your response on that?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. I thank the chair.
Thank my colleague, Senator Risch. Welcome. No questions? Senator Whitehouse, additional questions? Ambassador Goldberg, one question for you. What role, in your view, Ambassador, do you believe the Assistant Secretary should play in ensuring that intelligence-sharing relationships support broader diplomatic relationships and, obviously, vice versa?
Senator, I think that the intelligence relationships, among others, that take place with foreign governments are very important and very strong contributors to our national security. They have to be done, obviously, with great care. Our particular interest in INR is that the chief of mission and his or her authorities, as delegated by the president and the authorities conferred by the president, be respected as the oversight for the executive branch at the embassy. That is the particular State Department interest.
I thank you for that. My colleagues, still no questions. We don't have anything further of either of you. Is there anything else the two of you would like to add? The committee is going to have additional questions for the record, so it's clear to all senators and staff. We ask that members submit questions by 2 o'clock on Friday, so it will be possible to send them to the nominees. It's the committee's intent to review your responses, and it will be our desire to vote this month. So with that, the committee is adjourned.